to me, it's unfathomable that most people will actually not want to drive their cars.
Regardless of whether everybody does or doesn't want to drive their cars, at $1 a mile, the rideshare business is gigantic.
I'm going to interject. Gary, I can't have you yelling at Larry without yelling at me, because you and I have done some good battles. Why do we all of a sudden believe that Tesla's going to have 100% share? I mean, it's like absurd thinking, as Drew said before. It's very similar to what happened in 2020, 2021, where people thought that Tesla was going to go, remember this, 20 million units by 2030. You know what the estimate is today? 3.9.
And it reminds me of 15 years ago when I first started investing in Tesla, when EVs were not even a thing.
He hasn't done this once. He hasn't done this twice. He's done this consistently throughout his life.
I mean, Elon is a visionary, but it's like Elon says, and then therefore bulls believe. That's not the way analysts should be behaving.
Even though he's a bull, if he's not bullish enough, he gets castrated by the bigger bulls.
I analyzed Tesla exactly the same way as I analyzed Amazon in the past. And Amazon, I was roundly criticized for investing in. For many years, I was in the wilderness on Amazon. But I treated Amazon as a startup, and I didn't treat it as a book-selling company. I treat Tesla as a startup.
What we're going to do for the audience out there, we have a very special crew. And if you've ever watched a Piers Morgan's show, this is going to be a less shouty version of that and much more intellectual, let's say, okay? And I love Piers. He's a great guy. But we're going to sit down and discuss and debate Robotaxi, the Robotaxi network, specifically around Tesla and where that's going. We have Larry Goldberg and Emmett Peppers. Those that followed Tesla stories closely, y'all know them as Tesla investors, Tesla retail investors, Tesla bulls. They talk about Tesla quite often in a very positive light as far as what the long-term potential is. We also have Gary Black and Drew Dixon on the podcast as well. Gary Black, you also probably already know from the Tesla stuff. Gary has followed Tesla for a few years. He's very close to the story. He understands it deeply. He recently, in his fund, exited the Tesla position. So that's going to be a fascinating thing to think through. And Gary commonly, very unfairly a lot of times, is a punching bag on X for his takes, because he's willing to, you know, go out there and speak his mind and tell the story how it is. And then we try to get his back as much as possible, and we'll have him on the show here to give his viewpoint. And then we also have Drew Dixon out here with us as well. Drew, the way I categorize you through the years is like you're neutral slash bear on the story, but you tell me sort of how you would categorize yourself as it pertains to Tesla today.
I'm the reasonable bull, or the bear, the reasonable bear.
The reasonable bear.
The reasonable bear, yeah. So, and then Hans and I are going to do our best to just shut up and let these guys talk through this. We're going to be impartial, neutral as possible. Drew was making fun of me before we went live about that, but we're truly going to try our best. Actually, where I want to start here with this Robotaxi thing is actually with you, Gary, because you made a post a few days ago about how you've exited the position on your fund, FFND, right? Future fund. So walk us through that, so we all level set on the rationale behind it, and it may be tied to Robotaxi. I'm curious to see if Robotaxi is part of the thesis, if it's not part of the thesis, to kind of walk us through your mentality there, and then we'll turn this into a fantastic debate. So floor is yours, sir.
Okay. So we've been saying for, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years that we believe Tesla will get to what we call generalized, go anywhere, unsupervised autonomy. Defined as, you know, let's call it one critical disengagement per 10,000 miles, so once a year, but so will others. And so our view, again, going back a few years, is Waymo, Zoox, Baidu, Pony, NVIDIA, others will get there as well. So we never really put that much valuation into Robotaxi, into our models. And, you know, as we watched the stock go up, I don't know, 25% in the last month or so, it just felt to us like the valuation had gotten too stretched the price got too stretched relative to our underlying valuation. And, you know, at this point, you know, we got this Robotaxi event that starts in, you know, let's call it 9 days. We just think the risk reward is asymmetrical to the downside, because, again, people are getting excited about it. Tesla tends to be a sell the news type stock. And if you get one unintended incident, given that Tesla has no PR, you know, the stock could go down a lot. And I also worry that, you know, Austin is, you know, very heavily overfitted, HD mapped. It'll be one-to-one teleoperated. You really can't apply that to all markets. So I'm not in the camp that you can just suddenly say, okay, well, now let's see robotaxi go to all markets at once, because I'm not sure that you're going to get that conclusion out of Austin. So our view is, if you look at the valuation, and this is why we decided to exit, we had been trimming. We've been trimming since late 2022. It was our largest position for a while, as you know. And then we started trimming once they cut prices, which we didn't like. And it's helped our performance to have trimmed, because Tesla, as you know, hasn't done well the last couple of years from a performance standpoint, other than the last, you know, month or two, or I guess since November. But the way we look at it is, we go out to 2030. So we include, you know, 4 to 5 years worth of earnings. We have a $12 earnings number on 2030. We put a 2x PEG multiple on that. And you can do DCF as well. You're going to get the same amount. People make a big distinction that they use DCF instead of PE. But as you know, with DCF, the key components are earnings and growth. But if you put a, let's say, a 50 multiple on $12 of earnings, you're about $600 a share by 2030. You got to put a risk-adjusted cost of equity on that to figure out what it's worth. We figure it's worth about $310 using that methodology. And when it blasted through 310, we said, okay, it looks like it's still moving higher because of this robotaxi event. So we waited, and we finally got out, as you said, Forza, last week. And, you know, this is the first time since 2010 or 2021, I'm sorry, we've been out of the stock. And the last time we got out of the stock was February of 2021. You know, on a split adjusted basis, I think the stock was about 290, which shows how little it's done since then. And then we got back in about 6 months later, once it had fallen back to about 200. So we're still interested in the stock. It's still on our evoked set of names, but we just think there's going to be a better entry point once we get past this robotaxi hype.
Gary, can I just ask you a clarifying question? You said that you think Austin is going to be something that's overfitted with HD maps and one-to-one teleoperation. Are you talking about Tesla specifically is going to use HD maps and one-to-one teleoperation? And what's, like, is that conjecture? Do you have, like, what's the source? Why do you have that belief?
I don't know for sure. Obviously, I could be 100% wrong, but, you know, just reading the tea leaves, talking to different people. I mean, I talked to a lot of people who work at Tesla and a lot of people who used to work at Tesla. And, you know, people seem to believe that because, you know, look, people will make fun of me because I use the FSD community track, but there's no data out there, right? There's, as an analyst, you got to get data somewhere. And if there's no data, you can't just make it up or listen to management. And so, you know, what you see is that, you know, Tesla's trying to hire for people who can, I don't want to call them teleoperators, but people who can supervise from the back. And I just don't know within, you know, if you look at the community tracker, and again, that's about 3,700 participants, you know, 70,000 or 55,000 miles. You know, you see that the efficacy is about 98.7, which, you know, means you're still disengaging about once every couple of weeks. And to me, that's not robotaxi, right? If you were at 99.99, which would be one disengagement per year, that'd be a whole different story. But again, from the data we see publicly, and that's all we got, I don't like using it, but Tesla won't put out what their data is, yeah, unlike Waymo. So we assume that at least to get started, they're going to need teleoperators. And what we've heard is it'll be one teleoperator, and operator is a bad word, though, called telesupervisors, one per vehicle. And, you know, to me, that's not a scalable business. That's not, you know, if you're putting somebody in a remote operation, one person per car, and maybe it'll be one per 10, I don't know, but it's not something that you'll ever have to, you know, worry about if I'm Uber, that it's going to hurt me, because you're not really taking the cost out of the vehicle, the labor cost out of the vehicle.
Larry, Emmett, or Drew, do you guys want to jump in, add, rebuttal? Who wants to go first? Or do we want to, let me see.
Well, Emmett, sure, you need a bull to respond.
Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Rebellion Air. We know that a lot of you in our audience are big-time Tesla investors. But just because you're willing to make a big bet on a single company, that doesn't mean that you don't think about how to manage your risk to the downside. And let's face it, once that big concentrated Tesla position grows to be worth $1 million or more, it can definitely be a good time to bring in some professional help. But who can you hire that isn't going to give you cookie-cutter advice or scold you for not being diversified enough? That's where Rebellion Air can help. Bradford Ferguson and Matt Smith are big-time retail investors like you, and they've done tons of unique and insightful research around things like Tesla's FSD and energy, so they understand exactly where your conviction comes from. But they're also professionals, and through Rebellion Air, they specialize in helping investors like you with big concentrated investments to protect yourself from the downside risk while growing your share count over time using strategies like trimming and adding or covered calls. Not only that, but they can also help you to create a money master plan from your financial first principles. If that sounds interesting to you and you've got a $1 million position or more in a company like Tesla, you can head on over to rebellionair.com/Farzad using the link in the description to let them know that we sent you. That's rebellionair.com/Farzad. And now, back to the podcast.
Well, I mean, I think one thing about the community tracker that I lost faith in right off the bat is, like, how do they define disengagement? It's like, does it mean it's preventing an accident, or is it just preventing a somewhat uncomfortable situation? And then you have, you know, all these people, like, some people might just disengage it because, like, oh, I stopped at the stop sign a foot past the thing and that was uncomfortable, or, you know, it's just not really a great piece of data for me. So I kind of, you know, it is something, but it's not really the veracity of it, you know, speaking to the pragmatic, unsupervised full self-driving, doesn't seem to be comparable, you know, to me.
I guess my question is, when you drive it yourself, do you disengage, critically disengage, so to avoid an accident? Because that's the way they define it on the community tracker. They call it a critical disengagement as opposed to a normal. And they try to define it, but, you know, people may ignore that.
When you have so many people in the, you know, some of these people are going to define that in their own heads differently, or they have different tolerance levels for that, you know. So for me, when I'm driving it, I will disengage it when I'm just like, well, I want to get to this right lane sooner than the thing is telling me to get off the exit ramp, maybe, you know. But the thing, if I don't disengage it and I'm not, you know, it'll still do it just fine, but it's just not my personal comfort level. But if I had like an Uber driver, it would be totally fine for the Uber driver to be doing that. I wouldn't be telling the Uber driver, like, get to the right lane sooner, you know what I mean? So I think it's hard to say how many of the, there is some amount of those disengagements like that are probably put in that community tracker just by law of large numbers from all the people contributing to it. You just don't know what that is.
I guess my question, my question to you is, how often do you critically disengage? Is it once a month? Is it once a year? What is it? Because if it's once a month,
I can't remember the last time, but I also probably haven't driven 10,000 miles in the last like 3 months. You know,
I have. I've driven 18,000 miles in the last 8 months. And I can tell you that since .9, I haven't had a critical disengagement in almost 4,000 miles to date. Yesterday, I took it out on a stress test through downtown traffic at peak hours, into downtown at peak hours, out of downtown at peak hours, freeway, town, city. I'm yet to critically disengage. I disengage at the end of each drive. I disengage when I park. I disengage to drop people off at a restaurant, but to drop my guests off at a restaurant. But other than that, I haven't disengaged. Now, that's not true in the Cybertruck. I have had several critical disengagements in the Cybertruck on the freeways, because the Cybertruck tends to hug the yellow line, which is pretty dangerous. But other than that, I haven't had any critical disengagements. I've had far worse experiences in Ubers. But, you know, this is not the conversation to be had. This conversation is kind of spurious to the issue. The issue is, this is a brand new product. We expect there to be a lot of, you know, introduction. I mean, we had the same with Waymo. When Waymo first was introduced, there was a large amount of supervision, remote supervision. There will be a fair amount of remote supervision. My own internal information from Tesla is that it's certainly not one-to-one. They will have one-to-one, you know, eyes on, simply because this is the appropriate thing to do from a safety and from a cautionary point of view. But that's, I mean, it's not a one-to-one supervision driving. The supervision will be literally 2 or 3 to 1 for the first day as everybody watches, you know, the launch itself. But this is normal for a launch. This is a spurious conversation because there's little doubt in my mind that they will reach a degree of non-supervision, just as Waymo did after 3 to 6 months. And so I don't look at this, I don't look at Tesla as a company as I would look at, for example, a company like NVIDIA or any other competitive company or Google. I look at Tesla as a group of startups on top of an auto company. I can value the auto company, and I can also value the two major startups because Tesla's in transition. And I value Tesla the way I value startup companies that I invest in. And the way I value them is not as, you know, what the future earnings will be, what the discount on that, blah, blah, blah. I value that as likelihood of success and the value of success. And so I can value the car company, I can value the energy company, but the other two companies, I value the way I value them at in terms of startup investment. And they're startups with enormous capital, enormous opportunity, and incredible TAM for both the new products. So when I value the robotaxi business, getting to the subject of our conversation, I look at it the way I would look at any other startup. And I have a fair record, fairly good record at investing in startups and valuing startups. So what do I see? I see them in an extremely strong competitive position. I agree with Gary, there will be significant competition. I then look at the competition, look at the potential for this, for the competition. I look at the pluses and the minuses, and then I come to evaluation. And so I think that all the considerations that we've been speaking about for the robotaxi and its impact on Tesla is the wrong view. I can go through my evaluation of the robotaxi business and my competitive analysis, but that would be my short answer to the 2 points I think Gary's brought up.
Okay. Let's go ahead and pull in Drew. Drew, any response to Larry? Anything you want to add? Anything, anywhere you want to take it?
Well, I think Larry's right in that Tesla is, it's a conglomerate of interesting startup businesses, some that are more developed and advanced, some which are tougher, more difficult to value. And that's where we are today, and that's what fascinates me. As Emmett remembers 2 or 3 years ago when we first started having powwows, I do have certainly to the you folks, a contrarian view on the traditional business, the automotive manufacturing business. And if I wound things back far as 3 years ago today, as you'll remember, everyone's very excited about the business, the pure BEV business. Tesla appeared to have a technological lead. Quick EV adoption looked more inevitable than it does today. They had an overwhelming market share lead. All the mojo in the world, a lot has changed since. Things have been disappointing for the automotive business. Demand for their EVs was not as high as they hoped. And that was sort of 2 or 3 reasons why. First, overall, pure demand for pure BEVs turned out to be not as high as folks thought 3 years ago. Might change again, but certainly then below expectation. Tesla, as we all know, consequently forced to cut prices, which pressured their margins. New model launches didn't materialize or they were delayed. And at the worst possible time, traditional competitors started ramping up with marketable EVs. New competitors, especially the Chinese, started developing new products and have had great success. And I remember, I'm saying all this because I think we need to get to the crux of, you know, if we're having the great robotaxi debate, I think I like to get to the crux of what is it that's implied already? What is it that people are paying for when they buy shares of Tesla? And so from my perspective, before we get to the AVs, just the EVs, I remember saying, it might've been 2 or 3 years ago, I tweeted out that, you know, eventually once we've all adopted EVs, whatever year that would be, at the time I thought maybe 2030 would be a 75% point. I think I'll probably revise that later since then. But I said that everyone will sell more EVs than Tesla. And I just got laughed out of Twitter. It was, it was an interesting few days. But fast forward to now, and you kind of see the realities of things. You saw on who that is, Inside EVs, and maybe they're biased, but they're showing Tesla's market share falling out of the top 10% of pure BEVs in Europe in April. They've plummeted down those tables. And the consequence of all this, having to cut prices and seeing lower demand, is that the expectations that Mr. Market had for Tesla's overall business, right? And for the automotive business specifically, which back then was most of the story. Model 3 expectations back 3 years ago today were 1.1 million units. And now those same expectations by the 60 sell-side analysts that cover the stock are down to 550. So we've had a 50% decrease in Model 3, a 25% decrease in Model 1. Overall, if we thought total units would be 3.7 million units 3 years ago, we're down to 2. And moreover, because they had to cut prices, average selling prices, as you all know, down from $52,000 to $38,000. So the consequence of all that in terms of what we're going to see in 2025 for revenues for Tesla is they're going to be about 60% lower than what every investor who owned Tesla 3 years ago thought. That's just in the automotive business. Overall revenue is going to be down 40%. Gross margins are down 34%. Operating profits are going to be down 70% from where we thought. Earnings will be down 68%, 70%. And why we're here, what I think this is, it's a good segue back to what we're actually supposed to talk about. Amidst all these horrible fundamentals for Tesla, which Emmett and I have debated over the years, stock's up. It's up 35%. It was a $250 a share this time 3 years ago. It's a $340 now, whatever it did today. Got as high as 480, 490 in the post-Trump bump. And I think what I'm seeing, and Larry, you can correct me, Gary, Emmett, I think people went from believing that EVs were the future where Tesla would become the Apple of automaking and everyone else was going to become Nokia, BlackBerry, or Motorola. They've gone from not even... from that being the crux of the thesis to not caring much about it, because those that were so excited about things before, operating margins, sales growth, earnings growth, Model 2 launches, the Cybertruck, are now focused on something else. It's about AI-enhanced FSD, it's about robo-taxis, about Optimus. And it's not just the retail community, it's also the sell-side analysts that cover the stock. Over 50% or 52% of them are bullish and they love what's going to happen with FSD and Optimus and everything else. And I mean, even though Gary and I are supposed to be both the bears on this, I think he and I have, we've had debates. We've had different views about what the value of the core business is. But to me, it's important to try to figure that out, because once we can figure that number out, whether it's Gary's number or our number, what remains is what the world is ascribing to FSD and robotaxis and Optimus and everything else, in the Tesla skunk works, in the Musk call option, which I think can be a very compelling argument, but I think we should try to bed that down. So if I look at Tesla as it stands today, with just the metrics we see, and I talked about what people thought 25 would look like back in 22, but what 2025 looks like now is a share price of $340, a diluted market cap of $1.2 billion, sales of 98 million, call it 100, sorry, billion. So we're trading at 12 times sales. We're trading with a PE of $1.92. And I know that's just this year. It's going to be
Gary thinks $12 in 5 years or 10 or whatever, but it's on 178 times forward earnings. Okay, fine. My view today, even stronger than it was before, is that the value of the automotive business within Tesla is now a very small portion of this current cap, and it's even lower than I expected it to be. If what we all must figure out, what you guys must figure out, I must figure out, everyone in the investment community, is less about the future for the automotive manufacturing. I know, Gary, that's a big focus for you, and it has been for me too, but more about the prospects for FSD, Robotaxi, Energy, other must projects. And so what do? Gary, I think you said that you think Tesla's automotive business is worth X, and it's not big enough for you to justify being long the stock, and you have a bit of uncertainty, maybe there's a pause. I'm lower than you, as you know, in terms of what I think the auto business is worth. And I'm probably, honestly, even lower than I was 2 or 3 years ago when Emden and I first started talking about it, just because we've had the price cuts and the gross margins have collapsed and sales are down. Now, that could change with new product launches. But meanwhile, we have seen the emergence of competitors with EVs. The Chinese have gone a bit crazy, and they're something for all of automaking to reckon with. And if I say that, you know, Tesla is worth X, well, then 1 minus X is what the market is ascribing to FSD, Optimus, and other things. And I think that's a really big number.
I think we agree on that point, the bulls and the bears, Drew, about, you know, the minus X being the what Larry and I think attribute to the probability of Tesla solving unsupervised full self-driving and Optimus combined with the total addressable market of those two major, when you think startup, you think small, but these are like major industry changing, world changing startups, if you agree with the bulls, if they work out. But what's the probability of those working out? And as we get closer and closer to the robo-taxi launch in Austin, that probability, as they pass little milestones, that probability inches up higher and higher. And it makes sense for the stock price to inch up higher and higher, because if and when they actually solve it, then the stock price is going to be worth a lot more than what it is today.
That's the question. And I think we have to decompose that. I'm sorry to interrupt Larry and Emma.
Sure.
I think we must decompose that. It's great to say the value is going to be higher, but let's think about that. How do you get there? And let's say we extend beyond the traditional Uber, Lyft, ride sharing app platforms, which you assume are going to use somebody's autonomous software, yours or Tesla's, somebody's. But what will the demand be outside of that? And as a good old boy from Indiana, and maybe I'm just a boomer, but to me it's unfathomable that most people will actually not want to drive their cars and surrender that experience and enjoyment to a machine. So I could be wrong. Maybe as people get older, then definitely everyone will want it. But I think there's a lot of proof that still needs to be out there. There might be government regulation which forces it at some point, 2040, 2050. You guys might think sooner. But the question that, and this is going to be a controversial one for all of you, is how much do you think consumers outside of Uber and Lyft and taxis, how much will consumers pay to make their cars autonomous or to make sure they are? Obviously, early adopters are going to pay what they have to, but I don't think we're going to make the same mistake we made about Tesla's auto business and just extrapolate current or initial expectations forever. I think we should be objective about what things might look like as the technology spreads. Then make assumptions. Is it going to be Waymo? Is it going to be Tesla? Is it going to be some Chinese manufacturer? Is it going to be all of them? Is it going to standardize on one, like an Apple or an Android, and will everyone else be Nokia, Micra, and Motorola? Or will it not? And will it eventually, I mean, arguably, will competition create a case where autonomous in 2030, 2035, 2040 is a standard feature for all cars, like cruise control? It's something to think about.
Barry, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, it's about time we look very seriously at the market opportunity for self-driving cars. What is the size of that TAM? I mean, it's fair enough to question whether everybody will want to give up driving. I don't think that's true. Of course, it's true of the older generation. I can attest to that. My wife can't drive at night, won't drive at night. She will now. It's changed her life because she's now independent at night because she uses FSD 100% at night.
They can be good or bad, Larry, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the reality. All of this stuff is fluff. We have to look at what is the TAM, what is the potential TAM, what is Tesla's potential within that potential TAM, and what are the economics of what drives the potential for Tesla versus all the others.
Yep.
Let us stipulate everybody's going to have autonomy technology of one form or another. Let us stipulate that people are going to continue to want to drive their cars. Let us stipulate that Tesla will have, you know, competition, as Gary has pointed out. The question is, how do you value that? Now, I want to start by saying in 2021, Elon convened a meeting of his senior management, and this is memorialized in Walter Isaacson's book. In that meeting, he was convinced not to scrap the so-called $25,000 car. In that meeting, he agreed to allow them to go ahead on their steering wheel-enabled $25,000 car. However, here's the reality. He said he would agree. He did not agree. In 2022, he had a massive cost reduction exercise. In 2022, Elon decided in his wisdom that the future was autonomous and that he was not going to commit to the Mexican project. He was not going to commit to the $25,000 vehicle. He was not going to commit. He was going to go all in on autonomy. And that's just the reality, and that's why the car company is where it is today. The car company could have had a very different future, mm-hmm. but Elon realized that this was not the future for automotive. Now, am I saying this from conjecture? Yes. But it's as good a conjecture as everybody's conjectured so far on this conversation. I will say this, that I've done the competitive analysis and I've done the TAM analysis, and I've compared my analysis to the analysis of several other people in this industry. And I think that it holds up pretty well. And here is the reality. Regardless of whether everybody does or doesn't want to drive their cars, at a dollar a mile, the rideshare business is gigantic. It is a huge TAM. It is a TAM of several times, many times, the current Uber TAM, number one. Number two, Tesla has incredible operational and product advantages in this space. Regardless of what Gary may say, here are the simple facts. Firstly, the Cybercab is built for this market. It is built at a price that we estimate could be as low as $15,000. It's in line with some of the analysis from several other analysts. We think that it will probably, if it is ever offered to market, it would be offered to market in the range of $18,000 to $22,000. But it's going to cost Tesla well south of $15,000 at volume. That car can offer rideshare in the West, and I'm not talking about China. China's a different case. I'm going to get to China. That car can offer rideshare at a very significant discount to any other vehicle or technology currently being offered in the marketplace today. Why? A, because it includes all the sensor kits, it includes all the software, it includes everything. There isn't another car being offered or proposed in the marketplace from China or from the West that will reach the market at that kind of price in the West. Secondly, Tesla is the only company that could operate this type of vehicle globally, but I'm focusing in the US and European markets alone in my analysis. They're the only car, the only company that has the infrastructure ready to operate self-driving cars, autonomous cars at scale. Nobody else is even close. The only companies that could potentially rival them from an infrastructure management and operation perspective is Hertz, whose operations are definitely not geared to this type of autonomy, this type of rideshare. Hertz and other rental car companies. The third reason for their very significant advantage is the integration of their app with the rideshare, and it is far, far more integrated than, for example, Uber with a third-party vendor, or Uber buying a third-party vehicle supplied, or Waymo trying to scale their operational management and vehicle operations. So it's going to be a very significant advantage for them. So from a capital investment perspective, from an operational cost perspective, and from an overhead cost perspective, we know traditionally that Tesla runs their company at a significantly lower cost of operations than any other automaker. And it's quite clear that as an Elon company, as a Musk company, they will operate it significantly lower. So operational excellence, that is safety and control and management, information management and product experience, these are areas that Tesla has a significant advantage. People may argue some of those points. So when we talk about competitors in that space, in this very large space, which is probably 6 to 10 times Uber's current revenue volume, we can think about Uber plus OEM or proprietary software and hardware. We could think about Uber using, say, their own vehicles with Wave software, or we could think of other OEMs using their own software and or third-party software. None of them have the compute capability that Tesla has in the sense of, I'm not talking about the training software, compute hardware, although that's a big advantage from their point of view. What I'm talking about is the computer in the car. The computer in the car, Tesla's computer in the car, costs Tesla less than a third of what the same purpose computer costs NVIDIA to manufacture. Now, that must be an incredible number, but it is a number that is kind of indicative of Tesla's position in this marketplace. So from the get-go, Tesla has these massive advantages, and this is why in 2021, Elon decided to get out of the car business and get into the rideshare business, and he did it in the classic Elon way. He listened to his management team, he heard them, he said yes, but then he acted no. And within a year, he changed the direction of that company. And Drew can give us a detailed story of just how bad the auto business is. And I'm aligned with him, 100% aligned with him. It has nothing to do with what's on the ground. And if you want to know the TAM for the auto business, it is certainly 2 to 3 times Tesla's current the TAM for Tesla in the rideshare business is 2 to 3 times Tesla's current revenue stream right now in the auto business. So, I mean, I could go into much greater detail on the numbers. I've done the work, but that's the overview.
Drew, did you want to rebuttal to what Larry?
Well, it wasn't as much of a rebuttal as it's just a question for Larry, for Hans, for Emmett, for you. And I'll take at face value that you estimate the TAM for ride sharing and Ubers and Lyfts and all of it is much larger than what some folks think. And I assume that there's close to 100% certainty that it'll be Tesla providing this software. Or is it not?
No, not at all. Not at all. Tesla will be providing software for their own and any of their licensees, but I mean, it will be probably 5 to 10 major players.
So you can, you're envisioning a technological landscape where there's more than one or two dominant software suppliers.
I think that it will be a winner-take-most market.
Yeah.
In most markets, not the same winner will not be in all markets, but it'll be a winner-take-most in most markets.
Geographical monopolies, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I think there will be 3 to 5 players in every market, and there will be winner-take-most in many markets, and politicians may intervene to ensure that, you know, there is a winner for their winner is in their country has a winner based in their country. But look, the major markets are the United States, Europe, and it's going to be very difficult for the politicians to control the United States market and even difficult for them to control the European market.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Drew said before. This is deja vu from 2020, 21. Everybody, all the Tesla faithful got very excited and said that, you know, all the legacy companies, as they make EVs, they're all going to go bankrupt because they can't do it at the same cost that Tesla can. And what we found is that was not true. Everybody's got an EV. Tesla's EV share continues to fall. The same thing is going to happen with autonomy. And again, it's something we've said for 3 or 4 years. Tesla will get there, but its product is not superior to Waymo's. Waymo's spending a lot more money. It's not going to be superior to Pony or Baidu or Zoox. So when people say that, and I've seen, you know, numbers out there where people do this TAM and they go hours per day, trips per hour, miles per trip, dollar per mile, you can't look at it that way. You got to apply some sort of market share because there's going to be a ton of people that are in unsupervised autonomy or robo-taxis. So when people start, I saw a price target today of $4,500 a share, and it's like, but you're assuming they're going to get 100% share. And you're going to take all of Uber's business. And when you've got all these players, Waymo, WeRide, Pony, Nuro, Motional, NVIDIA, Wave, all as partners with Uber, okay? And they're all providing a driverless option because if Tesla can do it, if BYD can do it, these other folks can do it, as we've seen over the last couple of years, why do we all of a sudden believe that Tesla's going to have 100% share? I mean, it's like absurd thinking is... Drew said before, it's very similar to what happened in 2020, 2021, where people thought that Tesla was going to go, remember this? 20 million units by 2030. You know what the estimate is today? 3.9. And it's like, you guys have got to stop, you know, getting crazy and assuming Tesla's going to get 100% share because there is a competitive response and others can do what Tesla's doing.
Gary didn't hear anything I said. I guess he was knocked off, so I don't want to repeat all that I said, but okay.
Well, so Larry's point, just to sum it up very briefly, is that if everyone else has those same technologies, but it costs them multiples of what it costs Tesla to deliver the same products because Tesla's inference computer is cheaper, the vehicle is way cheaper, that, you know, no one is proposing a $15,000 vehicle that they can deliver into these rideshare markets, much less have the type of inference power that they can put in that computer at that price. So if Tesla can provide rideshare services and they're doing it at three quarters, a half, a third of what the Uber licensed version is, whether it's from Pony, whether it's from Waymo, whatever it is, that should have an impact on. He didn't say they would have 100% market share. He just said that they would have an outsized market share because they can do it at a much better cost. So do you have a response to that more specific point?
Yeah, we heard that in 2021. We heard exactly that argument that nobody could manufacture as cheaply as Tesla an EV, so that as the legacy autos, Ford, GM, Volkswagen, all came out with their own EVs, they couldn't compete with Tesla, and they were all going to go bankrupt. I remember this vividly, and Drew does too. And it was wrong. I mean, the forecast that people can't compete with Tesla because Tesla has, you know, a huge cost advantage. It didn't follow the history of EVs in 2021. So why would it follow with autonomy, Tom? They don't
actually
have a first
mover
advantage.
Gary, you're wrong. Tesla would have a very significant cost advantage if they had decided to pursue the EV business. I guess you just weren't listening or you were cut off or whatever. But look, currently Waymo are paying something north of $80,000 a vehicle. They are planning to have a vehicle next year that they will be paying a little bit north of $60,000. That's the vehicle that they're going to compete with the Tesla Cybercab. That vehicle costs more than a Model 3. Costs them almost double what it costs Tesla to manufacture the Model 3. That's just, you know, you can generalize, oh, you guys are all wrong. And that's fine. You can repeat that 15 more times in this conversation. But just deal with the fact that Waymo is paying more for their car right now, about 30% more for their car right now than Tesla's paying. And that Waymo then has to add operational costs that are already built into Tesla's operating business on top of that. And they have to pay Uber some margin when Uber uses them, because you say Uber's going to have all of these partners. How does that compete to a company that already has an infrastructure on a national and an international scale better than either Uber or Waymo put together? How are they going to compete? I mean, just don't tell me I've told you the story before again. Just tell me the answer to that question.
Forget Waymo. Look at Baidu. Baidu can produce a car at $25,000 a year. Why are you focused on Waymo?
This conversation, because Chinese cars will not be able to come to the U.S. and U.S. cars will not be able to go to China.
Let's look at global,
I'm not
Larry.
Going
look
to
at
look
things
at
globally
things globally
in China. You're
no,
going to just focus
US
on the U.S.
and Europe. I can't include China because, A, China is not going to be the same rideshare market it is in the U.S. because China, the cost of a driver is close to zero. So there's not going to be a rideshare market of consequence. Two, Chinese companies will not be able to operate in Europe or in the United States. So this is a spurious conversation. Let's drop this conversation. You can come back to it if you wish, but make it a cogent argument.
My point to you, Larry, and I'll let you say whatever you want. You want to get the last word, which is what you do. That's fine. There are lots of competitors that are doing what Tesla does, just as I predicted 3 or 4 years ago. You're focused on Waymo with its $100,000 vehicle. There are 5 or 6 other competitors who could produce a vehicle for $30,000.
$30,000 is not going to cut it.
Well, how do you know what Tesla can produce it for? Because Elon told you so, or he said it is? You don't see. There's no data out
there. Actually,
there's
is.
No data that
there
says
data.
Tesla can
that, hey, yeah,
where,
we've
where's
done.
The data?
We've,
where's
we've
the data?
We've had 3 knockdown artists do the actual analysis. Sandy Munro has done the, you know, item by item analysis of what the car is going to cost. We know already what the car is going to cost.
All right. I'm just saying that there are other, just like with EVs, where people said nobody else can produce it as cheaply as a Tesla. There are other people who can do this, Larry. You can't assume that Tesla's got the secret sauce and they're the only ones who could do it. That's the mistake.
Let me go ahead and bring in Drew. Go for it.
I'm going to interject. Gary, I can't have you yelling at Larry without yelling at me, because you and I have done some good battles. So I'm going to try to upset you with this next comment. And I think it's relevant. And it has to do with what it is we're paying for when we buy Tesla shares now, what I was going to do earlier. And please bear with me. I'm going to say some numbers which you're all going to think are extremely silly. But, and I'm not looking at its deteriorating growth or deteriorating sales, just the actual numbers that people are looking at now across the automotive industry. And if I lump together BMW, Mercedes, and GM, and Renault, and Stellantis, and Volkswagen, and Honda, and Toyota, and SAIC, the average PE, price-earnings ratio, that people pay for auto companies, even ones with decent stories, is less than 8x earnings. Now, if I assume that Tesla, despite all the deteriorating metrics I mentioned earlier, is a better business, it's automotive manufacturing, it's a better business, and deserving of a higher multiple than each of them, I could say it's worth 10 times. I could say it's worth 15 times earnings. I know these earnings are going to grow. And I know there's reasons that you will say, Gary, that you should pay a much higher multiple. But let me just start with that. At a PE of 15 times, Tesla would have a market cap of just $100 billion, if just the automaking business. To me, that's still a hell of a lot. It's more than any other automaker except Toyota, which, by the way, generates 5x more sales and 5x more EBITDA than Tesla does. It's about the same as BYD. And if we assume that number is reasonably close, $100 billion, if I said million earlier, I apologize, I meant a billion. If we assume that's close, that means the market today is already valuing Tesla's FSD, Robotaxi, Optimus, and energy businesses at $1.1 billion. Now, Gary might turn around and say, hey, I think that the auto business is worth $900 billion.
You meant to say 1.1 trillion, correct? 1.1 trillion.
I meant trillion.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm sorry. Let me restate that.
It's all good.
If Tesla's automotive business is worth $100 billion, then it has to be the case, because the market cap is $1.2 trillion, it has to be the case that the world's valuing, when you go out and buy a share of Tesla, that share is already pricing in, to me, a tremendous amount of success for Tesla's non-automotive manufacturing businesses, $1.1 trillion worth of present value. And as Gary has pointed out, obviously Waymo and Baidu and Mobileye and anybody else will have a different opinion about Tesla's prospects, as do some other industry observers. But I think, well, the two questions are who will win and will there be only one winner? We're kind of answering that question. I think Larry must have a much higher TAM than certainly I do and maybe others in terms of what that opportunity will become. But I do think it's imperative that for anyone going out and buying Tesla today, and I have to use this analogy with Emmett before, just know what you're buying. You are already buying some significant level of market cap that is assuming great things in FSD. It's not like you're buying a lottery ticket and no one's charging you for it. It's a big assumption out there. Now we can debate if the auto business is worth $100 billion or $200 billion or whatever the number is. And Gary and I think are miles apart there, so we could fight about that. But I'm pretty comfortable thinking that, boy, there's at least $1 trillion of value already ascribed to the market cap of Tesla for FSD and Optimus and the other stuff.
Drew.
Yeah, let's do Gary and then Emmett.
Can I respond? You're not paying for growth, Drew. You're valuing like a value. You're saying that Tesla should have the same multiple
on its
car business.
Three times. Tell me.
Wait. You're trying to put an industry, a car industry multiple on Tesla, even though Tesla competes only in the EV space, okay, where everything else is going away because they're...
I think the growth of these traditional automakers will be greater than Tesla's when they make the transition themselves. It has to be. That's what will happen at Volkswagen, at Stellantis, at GM. It has to.
What do you pay for a 30% grower if you're just looking at the EV business? The EV business, if it grows from 15% this year to 50%, by 2030, that's 30% a year. What do you pay for a 30% grower if Tesla just holds a share? Do you pay the same as GM or Ford?
Gary, I told you I'd pay more than you do for the others. But more importantly,
how sure are we of this 30% CAGR? Because you might have said that 3 years ago, and it's proving not to be the case. What will adoption be? When will it be? How much will it be? And who will have the share? And that to me is the question now. And obviously, I could have a completely different view if we get some positive data points in terms of BEV adoption, but I can look through the spate of what's coming out from everybody, and we're going to go hybrid first. I wonder what Emmett's view is on that, but it seems like that's really pushing. So is that a transition to ultimate EV or not? But hybrid is taken off in Europe and the U.S. to Larry's, you know, geographical focus. And as I kind of said, I think we're still selling 75-77% ICEs. And I would have said 3 years ago, and I probably did say to Emmett, that by 2030, that number would cross over into significantly large percentage of electric vehicles. It may still do that. But it's not going to be just Tesla that grows into that. It'll be these other automakers, too. I'm maybe hopelessly convinced of that. But I see Stellantis selling 400,000 BEVs in Europe next year.
Why are we constantly getting back to the BEV market?
Only reason, Larry, is we're just trying to figure out what is in the share price today for Tesla. We kind of have to have a guess at least on what the automotive business is being valued at. But before you know what you're paying for the FSD.
Let's stipulate that it's a relatively small component of the share price and move on, because we can spend a lot of time in this debate.
Okay, we'll stop doing that. If I say it's $100 billion and Larry says it's $600, those are big differences. But what remains is either $500 billion or $1 trillion of FSD that's already in the share price.
We could look at the other EV, pure EV makers, and look at their share value, their share price, and just deduce it from that. But I mean, I will tell you that in my calculations, it's not a big number.
Let me go ahead and bring Emmett in. Go for it.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, one thing I think Gary and I definitely agree on is a few years ago, the price cuts, instead of Elon, like I think what Larry said, changed course. And at the time, many of us bulls at the time thought the price cuts were the wrong decision, and they should have been doing a massive public education campaign, because to this day, there's still most people don't understand the value proposition that driving a Model 3 or a Model Y brings. I think me and Gary definitely agree that if in a parallel universe, Elon decided to do a massive, you know, campaign to educate the public, and maybe if he didn't get into politics a year ago or whatever, then maybe we'd be well on the way to 20 million EVs being manufactured and sold by Tesla by 2030, you know, that Drew and Matt and I discussed as the goal 3 years ago. Before that, you know, big pivot came of price cuts. And I call the death by a thousand cuts to the EV manufacturing segment of what Tesla share price represented. And that's when you really had to do soul searching as a bull. Like, am I going to hang in this stock for the potential of full self-driving and maybe this humanoid robot thing in the future? And I did. And I decided, I think it's definitely the total addressable market and the probability. It's risky at the time, but it felt like a risk worth taking, and it's coming closer and closer to fruition now with the Austin event about to happen. And it reminds me of 15 years ago when I first started investing in Tesla, when EVs were not even a thing. 2010, I remember arguing on Seeking Alpha comment sections with Mark Spitznagel and other people about like EVs, and Tesla was a $2 billion market cap company at the time. I was like, oh, the Model S is getting some reviews of Motor Trend, you know, blah, blah, blah. And look where it is now, right? And so it's a whole new industry that Tesla created, that Elon Musk, you know, manifested with his management style and with the Tesla management team and engineers. And they're about to do the same thing, in my opinion, with disrupting the entire transportation industry, making unsupervised full self-driving robo-taxis a thing in the entire country of the United States to begin with. Like, it's going to be a city by city, but a year from now, 18 months from now, it's going to be everywhere. And it's going to be coming back to this conversation, you, be like, I told you so. That's what I think. But that's my opinion.
You might be
stock is worth what it is.
You might be dead right. And I love your conviction. I would just point out that that is what the entire market, I'm getting back to the share price. That's what the entire market has done.
Correct.
The entire market has changed their investment thesis.
Correct.
On this stock from being an electric vehicle manufacturer to being a software provider and paying multiples as such. That may be what's happening, but I've been around. Larry, you've been around. Gary, you've been around. These other three, they haven't been around. We've been around. And more times than not, thesis drift is a bad thing for investors.
I have a question
for you. More times than not.
I have a question for you. Have you invested in startups, in companies from zero?
Rarely.
Okay.
My experience is more on the listed public market space. And in fact, Larry, focusing on Tesla is not even my day job. I focus on European companies. So I'm just fascinated by this.
So that I think is what distinguishes me from everybody else on this in the panel. That is my day job. My investment in the public markets has always been a side venture for me. I'll tell you a little story. Elon Musk started SpaceX with Falcon 1. And when Falcon 3 finally flew and went into orbit, everybody in SpaceX, I had this conversation with Tom Mueller, every single body in SpaceX thought, this is it, we're on the way. And Elon turned to Gwynne Shotwell and said, we're canceling Falcon 1, we're going to Falcon 5. It ended up canceling Falcon 5, going to Falcon 9. Everybody thought it was crazy. Everybody went into mourning. He hasn't done this once. He hasn't done this twice. He's done this consistently throughout his life. You can go back to his prior companies before SpaceX, before Tesla. You can go to PayPal. You can even go to his first company. Every time he sees that where he's going is not where the market is, he makes a change. And when he makes that change, he does it with absolute conviction, and he does it without any concern for where the company is or was on the previous.
Larry, I agree with you. And I had mentioned that you and I haven't spoken, but Emmett and I have. And there are other Tesla bears out there who have all these disparaging things to say about that man. I am the opposite of that. I am in complete agreement that, in short, he's a winner. He's going to, he'll change course mid-course, and he'll change it the right way. And he's been so successful. He's a polymath, for Christ's sake.
Sometimes the wrong way. He's the
first to admit it. He'll admit it, and he'll change tack.
Yeah.
His ability to multitask across all the things he can do, to me, it's mind-boggling. I'm impressed by this person, and I don't get bogged down in the increasingly wild politics that are discussed on both sides, because I think it's a huge distraction.
Yep.
So I think it's wonderful that you have this conviction in him. I would say that we'll have to see the proof of the pudding.
Yep.
At some point. And right now, I do think the market cap is implying an awful lot of good stuff.
So can I try to give a brief summary of, I think, the three different positions that I'm hearing here, and then move the direction a little bit more towards metrics? And so correct me if I'm wrong. I would say, Drew, your position is that there's potential for Tesla. It's very interesting, but given the current market cap situation, there's as much to lose as there is to gain, and potentially more, you know, if the core auto business ends up being the terminal value of the company. And so in order for them to really deliver on the current expectations of the market. Like, they have to execute extremely, extremely well, and that you're focused more on the potential of what you could lose if they don't execute that well than what you could gain if they do. I think that's
I think it's close. I would argue that in the worst case, the terminal value of the auto business is zero. I don't believe that's mm-hmm. what it is. But in the world where it becomes DeLorean yep. and the rest of the value of the company is everything else, that's what's going to matter mm-hmm. even more. The question is, do people that are buying the stock today or holding the stock mm-hmm. today,
do they
realize
that
they're paying that much for these cool things that Tesla or Elon might possibly figure out and win? Mm-hmm. Is the share price already discounting mm-hmm. that? That's Jeez. My point.
Drew, it would be fatally incorrect to assume the auto company is worthless. The auto company is an integral, unitary, and absolutely necessary component.
I don't think it's worthless, Larry. I was just saying in the worst case.
But it is an incredibly important part of the rideshare business. I've tried to make that point. I'm not sure I've driven that home. But without it, Tesla would not be able to win the rideshare business. With it, we assume, my own analysis is that they are going to win. Gary assumes that it's not going to win, but I think that its integrated auto company with its manufacturing expertise is a critical component of winning this particular race.
I hear you.
Go ahead, Hans.
I hear you, Larry. Go ahead, Hans. Yeah. Sorry.
So I think your point, Drew, then would be, you know, people are probably investing money that they may not realize has as much risk in it as it does. And that as someone who thinks about things is in more in terms of risk reward and what could I potentially lose, that people may be putting money that they can't afford to lose in a name where they don't realize that chance is there.
That is a concern. Emmett knows I do this. I have tried yep. to just share my views, not because I have been short the stock personally. I've been long the stock personally. I have no position now. And we're in a mm-hmm. European fund. We don't even yep. buy or sell Tesla. I mean, we're interested in automaking, but mm-hmm. I'm not talking my position here. I'm just literally fascinated by Elon, fascinated by Tesla, fascinated mm-hmm. by the market's reaction. Fascinated by the market's reaction to what was a lousy quarter in my mind on every metric, but up it goes. Don't understand it. It's wonderful.
And it's going to be an even more lousy quarter this quarter.
Yeah. Yep. So then let me move to Larry, and then I'll come back to Gary since you're kind of in the middle of the two positions. Larry, on the other end of the spectrum, is...
First I talked to Larry, and then I talked to Gary, and everyone thought he was so extraordinary. Never mind.
Awesome. Break it down.
I want to hear from Emmett. I want to hear from Emmett.
Well, let's.
He's the one sane mind here.
I'm actually curious to see how. So Hans, categorize, and then we'll go to Emmett.
Yeah.
And then
so
we'll, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would say Larry's position is that, you know, the potential. You know, he's very savvy at managing risk. He's only investing money that he can afford to lose. He can quantify the risk, and he thinks that the upside is so potentially asymmetric that he's willing to, you know, put a larger portion of that valuation on what Tesla could do, and grounded in a lot of the fundamentals of the technology, the fundamentals of the price elasticity of demand of the rideshare market, the fundamentals of the cost of, you know, delivering not only the manufacturing of the vehicle, but delivering this AI-enabled robotaxi service at scale. And so he's valuing it very much like a startup at scale, and willing to pay more for it because of Elon's history and those things. And then Gary is interested in it, more skeptical, but just kind of, you know, I like it. It's a little bit too expensive right now. Maybe I'll get back in. And so then my question there, if that's a fair categorization of the three positions, is what are the metrics or the data that each of you would look at that would change your perception of the valuation?
Does Gary want to go first?
I guess I would like to see, you know, if we get through this Austin test without incident, how quickly can Tesla scale up their, we'll call it, ride-hailing business? And again, they're going up with a pretty formidable competitor in Uber, less so with Lyft. And then, you know, we try to figure out what is that business worth. And I'd like to try to figure that out if we can get through Austin without incident. So I think that, but look, the basic EV business, the reason we got involved with Tesla back in 2019, when it was $15 a share, is we felt that EV adoption was going to explode. And it turned into the best position to do it. When I look at that EV business, if you had a true conventional pickup truck, that 6% of the market said this cyber truck that, you know, very few people want because it's $70,000 each. If you had a, like, you know, remember Model X was a $70,000 car, they brought out Model Y at, you know, called 50, and it broadened its TAM immensely. If you could do the same thing, and if you could have another form factor, which is a hatchback, and launch it, that base EV business could be worth 50% more, back to Drew's point, than it is today. So I don't need Robotax to be worth, you know, another $2 or $3 trillion, which, again, it may be, but it's so speculative. It's so, well, if this happens and that happens and there's no incidents and, you know, they could take away from Uber, then it's worth X. And I've never seen a demand base analysis. It's always supply base, right? As we talked about before, then I would be more excited about it. But I have a hard time when it's so speculative. It's like a promise. It's not like a real cash flow stream.
So I guess, real numbers, yeah, that's my question, isn't what would you see today, but in the future, like say it's 6 months from now, like what are the data points that you are looking for to help you feel confident that it's not as speculative anymore? And so, I mean, you did kind of answer that by saying that, you know, if we can get through without incident, is there anything else besides just getting through Austin without incident, any sort of growth rates or?
Well, let's take this. So look at Waymo. Waymo's now in, I don't know, they're looking at going into Atlanta. But if you had, say, Tesla say, okay, we're going to enter these six markets, and they would have to post their efficacy numbers so that everybody can see them. And then we could all model, okay, in these markets, assuming it could get into them, how much TAM is there in these six markets? And we could put some numbers on it. And then over, say, maybe back to Larry's point, you know, go out 5 or 10 years and say, if you extrapolate that to the country as a whole, and then globally, full world with competition that's trying to do the same thing. Sure, I would be very willing to put that into valuation. But at this point,
I think if you saw Tesla move in, where someone had already established a reasonable market share leading presence, and watch Tesla immediately displace them within 6 months or 12, that would be a very positive sign for Tesla and what they're doing. And that could portend the future. But for me, and this is even more boring than Gary's answer, I want to look at what revenues look like and operating profits across the firm in 3 years and 5 years and 7 years. I want to look at the fundamental metrics that help me decide what I want to pay for something. I know that Larry has much more experience in investing with startups that have no revenue, trying to make good, well-informed guesses of what that future might look like. I'm too public market to do that well. I want to see the numbers improving, not deteriorating. I want to see sales growth, revenue growth. I want to see expanding operating margins. I want to see market share. And it could start with them displacing Waymo in San Francisco or whatever it does. But it would need to be positive things happening, positive news flow, driving improved financial metrics. That gets me interested.
So market share would be helpful, like the city versus Waymo, which is, you know, it's competition right now. You say it's San Francisco, but it could be in Waymo's 10 markets. If Tesla were to launch in those markets and steal its market share, that would be important to you.
So the Austin launch in the next couple of weeks here, that could be, so like you could get that data as early as in the next month or two as they scale the business potentially, depending on how quickly they scale it. Yeah. Let me bring in Emmett. Emmett is our unfortunate fourth wheel right now, so we got to bring you in, brother. We got to get some the work count up on your side.
The most reasonable guy here hasn't been allowed to speak for as long. Come on.
I think the reason why he's been quiet is because he's reasonable.
No, I'm just learning from you guys, trying to listen. You know, you guys have very different perspectives than me in general. I just want to hear everyone else's perspective, you know, to help form my own opinion and see if my own opinion changes on things based on that. And that's what I always do. And that's why I love hearing bears talk. I used to always be obsessed with listening to podcasts of Tesla bears discuss why they're short Tesla and try to see if it would change my thesis on it and so forth. But what I think about the future a lot, and I want to, it's very hard to see what the future is going to be like 10 years from now, but 5 years from now, you sort of try to, you know, figure out what it might be like. And in a best case scenario with Tesla, with the future, with, you know, if they execute on the full self-driving, big if, right? That's the price in the stock right now, is that if, and then the, if they execute on humanoid robots, and that's another if that we haven't really talked about in this conversation, which is a whole nother part of the X in the equation, Drew, that I'm not sure has been discussed.
We haven't discussed it at all. Yeah.
And so I also think about things probabilistically versus, you know, in a binary way, you know, and I think it's risky and speculative, Tesla. And so it's not a conventional stock. It's more like a startup, like Larry was saying, in a lot of ways, because this is, you know, the biggest startup in history, what we're coming upon, the two of the biggest startups in history with the unsupervised full self-driving robotaxi rollout and the upcoming Tesla Optimus humanoid robots. I mean, those are, that's the two of the biggest startups ever in history I can think of, really. And so if these things matriculate and become successful, if the stock price is going to be 10 times what it is now, at least in my opinion. And that sounds crazy, right? But if they're producing a million humanoid robots a year, you know, 5, 7, 8 years from now, millions of them a year that are like disrupting the entire labor market. I mean, why not? Why couldn't it be a 10 trillion market cap plus company, you know? And so the robotaxi full self-driving, I see it bringing Tesla's total addressable market. You know, this is what I think about in like big picture, 2 to 3, maybe 4, 2 to 5 trillion market cap, you know, at the most, you know, alone, you know, and so I think 2 to 3 is reasonable, 2 to 3 trillion market cap valuation if they really become successful with the robotaxi rollout. But then it's going to overshoot that and suddenly be a 5 trillion. People are going to say, oh, that's ridiculous. It should be just a 2 trillion market cap with the revenues of the robotaxi. We should short a 5 trillion. But they're not going to realize the humanoid robot is what speculation of that is what's bringing it to 5 trillion market cap. So that's just kind of where I see the stock going. It's always going to seem super expensive. You know, back in 2010, 2015, 2017, it seemed super expensive to bears at the time, you know. And so it's just always going to be like that. Historically, you know, companies that change the world like Tesla, they're just going to be hard to catch for a conventional thinker.
Let me ask you this, Emmett, and Larry alluded to this as well, in terms of just the fundamental developments now. In any other world, with any other stock, if you showed the kind of numbers you would have shown at the first quarter, the stocks would have been down 30%. But Tesla's up 30. Is that because people are looking to Austin and they just shift? Okay.
I think they're looking at it as a startup, like Larry was saying. They're not looking at it as a conventional stock right now. It's just, it's the biggest startup in the world with the full self-driving robotaxi and the humanoid robot. That's why.
Yeah. Okay.
There's some subset of people, investors, that do look at it like that, but those people have mostly got out of the stock. Most of the people owning the stock right now are people that believe in these startup ideas that are about to take off.
Well, I'll tell you this, and I know Larry will push me back. You will, Gary might. I can tell you that from an institutional investor perspective, a buy-side perspective, the folks that would normally maybe be on the short side of a story like this are refusing to do it because they see the power of Elon's tweets and how he can jack the price up, the share price up, just by saying a few things, and they're going to lose 20 or 30% in their pod they're running $100 million for, and they're going to get fired. So just people that would otherwise be out there helping with price discovery, I do think it's a real incredible value to short sellers in many cases. But in this case, they're away. And they're, yes, you'll see guys short when you look through Bloomberg, but not like there would have been for others. And it makes me wonder if price discovery is wrong, but I guess we'll find out after Austin, and we'll find out going forward.
The last time a lot of people shorted it was during the 2019-2020 run-up. And that's when a bunch of shorts had to get out at the same time as, you know, being profitable with the Model 3 rollout. And it just, it created a very lumpy price discovery, as you say, versus maybe, you know, interestingly now, paradoxically, maybe because of the more probabilistic thinking of like the shorts staying out of it, but the people, the bulls thinking more probabilistically like, hey, they're going to solve it. They're going to solve it. Maybe the stock will more smoothly get up to the one to the 2 to 3 trillion market cap in the next 1 or 2 years when they're successful robotaxi versus a quick 10X in share price when all the shorts are covering at the same time.
Yeah. Let me just add a piece of speculation here as to part of the market cap for you, Drew, that, you know, I could be completely wrong on this, but I think that one of the components that investors see in Tesla is that there is this huge investment into the broader AI investment theme that Elon has developed this giant.
I call it the Musk option. What genius?
But it's not just the Musk option. I mean, I think there's a certain amount of it.
It's like he's got all this cash flow. He can do things and start businesses and turn this FSD thing into an AI enhanced FSD thing, which even has other applications. Mm-hmm. That is this lovely open-ended stuff about Elon Musk, which entices Larry as well, that are very difficult to predict, although it'd be silly to say that it's not possible.
I guess my point wasn't necessarily wherever you handicap Elon's ability to execute. Like, the fact of the matter is they have a compute cluster that rivals hyperscalers in size and access to data. And so, I mean, yes, there's like the Musk part of that, but there's a lot of investors who are looking at those specific, you know, components and putting some sort of a value on them. Even companies like CoreWeave. I think that's part of the valuation.
Yeah, that's part of the non-automotive, traditional automotive valuation. Yeah. Okay, Larry's back. I thought you had enough, Larry, but welcome back.
No, I just let my dog in. Jeez.
Oh, I got my dog in.
Yeah. So, you know, I, in a way, I'm kind of disappointed we didn't really get into the P&L opportunity in rideshare, because that's where a fairly significant portion, not all.
Right, Larry, what's the annual TAM in rideshare in 2028?
Well, I don't know about 2028. That's a bit close. So if rideshare prices run at about $1 a mile, the TAM is probably 30, 40 times its current TAM. So right now,
what's the current TAM?
Well, that's an interesting question, but it's not much more than $50 million, I would guess. I mean, I don't have it at hand right now. I have to look it up. Maybe I can look it up while we're speaking. But it's not very large. The potential TAM, you know, is in the range of $1 trillion, because once you get down to $1 a mile, rideshare changes its character, and the character of how people use vehicles changes altogether. Mm-hmm. So that's really where, you know, some prognosticators are getting into the $1 trillion TAM on a global basis. And by the way, that excludes much revenue from China at all, because China right now, the savings from running a rideshare is not that high. As I've said, the cost of a driver in China, as it is in India, as it is in many parts of the Far East, is trivial. I mean, it doesn't add very much. But if you take the driver out of the seat and you run a two-seater vehicle, then the TAM for that is very high. And then, you know, that is not touching on the TAM for trucking. That's a whole different market. So the TAM is somewhere between 50 million and a trillion. And it sounds ridiculous, but it's certainly in that range. And so the question is, how far up that range do you get? I think a reasonable estimation of 400 to 500 $1 billion is something that we can look at in the relatively short term, in the 5 to 7 year range.
And this is ride sharing alone.
Yeah, ride sharing alone.
And so displacing Uber and taxis and Lyft doesn't get you to that number.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, the objective here is not to displace Uber and Lyft. The objective here is to displace riders in cars, people driving their own vehicles. So Elon would not be getting into this business to displace Uber. That's not his objective here. And anybody who thinks that he is must be thinking he's crazy or doesn't have much intellectual power. There's not much point in displacing Uber or Lyft. It's a trivial business and certainly not worth, $1 trillion.
Yeah, but your point is this: the TAM is not just driven by what we would call traditional people wanting to use someone else's car or people wanting to get a ride from somebody like Uber.
Oh, absolutely not.
You're saying that we'll all want to use ride sharing.
No, not we'll
all. To some degree, or a good portion of it.
But a very large proportion of us. So people who are facing 30 and 50 mile commutes today, which is a very large number, will rather use rideshare, A, because it's cheaper than running their own car, quite a lot cheaper than running their own
car. Avoid parking, but all that. I can see New York, San Francisco, Chicago. I can see that.
Well, hard to see it. What are you talking about? Cary, North Carolina is not in one of the largest metropolises. We have multiple, we have thousands of people. We have the majority of our people commuting more than 20 miles a day. The majority.
But don't they enjoy it? Driving to work?
Right.
Stopping at the McDonald's, getting a Diet Coke, put the window down, saying hi to people.
No.
Come on, Farzad.
I'm not talking about getting children to where they have to go to. I'm not talking about the senior citizens. I'm talking about replacing a large percentage of the vehicles.
Community workforce. Yeah.
Not only the commuting workforce.
Okay.
I'm talking about people who buy cars. I'm talking about replacing a very significant portion, not the bulk of, but a significant portion of people who have cars in the garage. I see the number of cars in the garage reducing by more than a third within 5 years of a true dollar a mile ride share. And by the way,
families will still need somewhere to put the lawn chairs and the football cleats and the skis and the guitars and whatever it is you need to take with you. You don't want to take that in the house every time after a ride.
Well, the ride chair works better than a family car because the ride chair's got enormous, the Tesla ride chair.
Yeah, but you want to just leave it in the garage. You don't have to lug it.
Leave it in the garage. Of course, leave it in the garage, not leave it in the car. All right. So my disappointment is we didn't look at the rideshare market and the opportunities in the rideshare market. We didn't look at the opportunities for the two-seater rover cab versus a conventional car. I think that is where the conversation should go, and I think that's where the market is going. And finally, we didn't look at the rideshare for all the deliveries that need to be made. If you take an Optimus robot, and a rideshare vehicle, you have the perfect delivery vehicle for most small deliveries, because that last 15 yards or 25 yards and the first 15 yards is a very important component of it. Anyway, I think, there's a lot to be said on every side. I think the skeptics are reasonable to be skeptical. I think that's the reason that, VC people make money by not by having every investment of theirs return a 15% return, but by having one or two of their 15 investments returning hundreds and hundreds of percent.
And 14 of them not working.
I beg your pardon?
And 14 of them not working.
Yeah, correct. So one of the things we've learned as investors is that Elon has an incredible success rate. Even when he's had failures, he's been able to turn them into success. And that's one of the keys to investing with Elon, is that he is extremely resourceful. Even in failure, he finds solutions. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, and just to add some numbers for Larry real quick, the 2024 just U.S. ride hail, I am seeing reliable numbers somewhere in the $28.5 billion.
That can't be right. That can't be right. I'll need to check my sources.
Okay.
Well, I think what Larry's
that was just U.S.
There's more stuff to talk about, which means, as far as I, you schedule another one of these for after Austin. And
yes,
we'll get into Larry's other points.
That's literally exactly where I was going. I do think what I'm really curious to get. So one of my key takeaways from this discussion is that, and it's sort of Hans talked about this a little bit, but it does really seem like the proof needs to be in the pudding for people like Drew and Gary to start taking the FSD robotaxi story where the bulls are. So the bulls are assuming that when Tesla's scale actually kicks in, with the assumption that the approach they've taken with their strategy of essentially strapping the FSD self-driving solution to the current fleet of manufacturing that they're doing in their factory. So every car, the assumption is that every car they're building right now will turn into a robotaxi at some point, which implies that they'll have millions of units per year of production of self-driving cars versus everyone else, right? Which is a potentially up to 1,000x differential between a player like Tesla and Waymo. The assumption is that will give a company the ability to basically proliferate wherever they are allowed to as the technology hits that sort of threshold, right? And so the question becomes, if that is true, then we should start seeing that in the United States as early as in the next couple of months, as Austin starts to expand.
Right. I'm very excited about Sean Duffy's close relationship with Tesla at this point as well, and coming up with these federal reporting guidelines and where those breadcrumbs will lead, so that we don't have to deal with a state-by-state regulatory thing.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. So before, and we've been together almost 2 hours already, which is kind of unbelievable. So to be respectful of everyone's time, I'll let people give their last word here if they have any. And then if y'all are down, like Drew said, we should do a follow-up after Austin's live and we have a little bit of data.
I just want to tell Hans, Uber's global revenue is $43 billion alone. So since 60% of their revenue is in the U.S., their revenue is like $24 billion in the U.S. So I don't think...
Okay, maybe... Yep, I'll have to rerun some...
Yeah. Now. Yeah.
Perplexity has failed me.
Yeah.
Probably not the first time.
It often does.
Yeah.
Right. He's Grok.
Around the horn, Gary, any parting words, any last thoughts?
No, just that TAM has to be demand-based. We got to consider the competitive response. I think that's where the bulls of the past have forgotten about that. And stop listening to Elon. I mean, Elon is a visionary, but it's like Elon says, and then therefore bulls believe. That's not the way analysts should be behaving. So that's my
Drew, any parting words, last thoughts?
My parting words are gratefulness for the five of you and us having what could have been a very spirited, becoming angry debate, because there's a lot of borderline religion on both sides of the Tesla bull and bear cases. And it gets ugly out there. And Emmett's seen it, even though he's a bull. If he's not bullish enough, he gets castrated by the bigger bulls. And this has been nice to just have a wonderful civil conversation with smart folks about the future of this fascinating company that we have completely different opinions on. And that's how we're all going to learn. So thank you, guys.
We'll make the next one the shit show. How about that? This one's the civil one. The next one will be the shit show. Emmett, go for it. Any parting words?
Yeah, I also want to mimic Drew and being grateful for hearing your perspectives. You know, I have my view, which I try to zoom out as much as possible to look at, you know, the bigger picture, forest from the trees on, you know, the entire economy and how that's going to change. But I love seeing the views of the trees, meaning like, you know, cost per mile analysis, Drew's analysis on revenue growth disappointing in EV manufacturing the last few years, you know, just lots of analysis on the stuff that I don't normally dig into so much detail on. I'm just trying to reconfirm my bigger picture view of where Tesla's going. I mean, I have an idea, but it's good to get these details frequently just to make sure my bigger picture thesis is, it doesn't need to be adjusted. But as of now, my bigger picture thesis, I do feel confident about it still.
And then last but not least, Mr. Larry Goldberg, parting words.
Well, firstly, I reject Gary's insinuation that I'm just listening to Elon. In fact, if he had been listening when he got locked off, I quoted my thoughts of what Elon was thinking but didn't say. I do place a lot of credence in what Elon says. I also am reasonably skeptical of what he says. I do treat him as a visionary, but visionaries often miss the trees for the forest. So I do look at the underlying facts. I analyze Tesla exactly the same way as I analyzed Amazon in the past. And Amazon, I was roundly criticized for investing in for many years. I was in the wilderness on Amazon, but I treated Amazon as a startup and I didn't treat it as a book selling company. I treat Tesla as a startup. I don't treat it as a car manufacturing company. Yeah. I make my own judgments on what the opportunities and the possibilities are with Tesla and the quality and skill and intellectual strength of its leader. So on balance, I think this is probably one of my better investments. But then I have to also admit that every single investment I have in every single Musk company, with the exception of Boring Company, which I don't have any connection to, any investment in, I regard very highly, and they've done very well for me.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you all very much. You can find... Yeah, go ahead, Drew. By the way, epic t-shirt change, FYI.
That's what I wanted to bring up.
Holy shit.
You get to choose. Are we talking about Tesla, or are we talking about DeLorean? What are we doing here?
That was fantastic.
5 years.
I saw you come in with that. I'm like, oh, that was epic. And then the conversation went, I'm like, and I completely forgot to bring it up until now. So that was incredible. If you found that change, put the timestamp in the comments below. My goodness. Gary Black, you can find him at ticker FFND at the Future Fund. Drew Dixon, CIO at Albert Bridge Capital. My Jesus, I can't even speak right now. Make sure you go check him out. Larry Goldberg at Tesla Larry on X, and Emmett at Emmett Peppers on X. Where can people find you? Yeah, perfect. Okay. And then Hans and I, you already are here. So you watched it. Thank you very much. Like, subscribe, blah, blah, blah. Goodbye.
I enjoyed it, guys. Thank you very much.
Awesome. All right.
Thank you.
Time, guys. Let me go ahead and end record.